Hi, I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans. 30% of Americans who are planning home improvements of $5,000 or more will pay for those renovations with a high-interest credit card. That may not be a great idea. A better idea may be to take cash out of your home with a Quicken Loans 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. The rate today on our 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is 4.375%. APR, 4.65%. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate subject to change. Pay 2.13% fee to receive this discounted rate. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. License in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. My name is Daryl Ong, and you tune in to Bar None, the show that brings you through the ins and outs of the sporting world. Ending off the year, here's our look back episode for some of our favorite sporting stories of 2017. First up, Cindy Jane, one of the bright stars of our national bowling team and also gold medalist at the 2017 SEA Games. She this year etched her name in Malaysia's history books by becoming the first Malaysian champion in the Professional Women's Bowling Association Tour. Here's a segment from that feature.
I started since I was 8 years old and I was in Royal Perak Golf Club where my parents just dropped me and my brothers there for swimming, for tennis. And
safe to say, they just can't handle you.
No, I think they can handle me, but they just want...
Right, I mean, it worked out well.
Yeah, it worked out well. I used to swim a lot, but eventually I just liked bowling, maybe because my brothers were the Perak state bowler as well before that.
So you played over the weekends... You liked swimming, but then you liked bowling a little bit more than swimming.
Maybe because it's indoor.
Right. I mean, that makes a lot of sense, actually.
Yeah, it does.
It's interesting. I heard this from one of our local sporting legends that he said, like, we sort of like indoor sports, and it's probably because of the weather.
Yeah, I would say yes, because I remember that I was at the tennis court, and... I was like finding shades. Where am I supposed to hide? And yeah, I mean, I think that's the whole reason.
Hey, swimming is outdoors too. But I guess you're underwater.
But I can hide under the water. I can swim at night.
That's a great point.
Oh, that's true.
Were there any other sports you were having fun with or interested in? What set bowling apart from all these other things you're interested in?
Badminton. And golf when I was young, but right now, to prevent injuries,
you can't do all that anymore.
No, I have to take care of myself.
What's your best and worst moments so far?
I would say the best moment is winning the professional women's title and also winning the World Cup back in 2014, I think. And also Asian Games 2014. The worst moment will be 2010 Guangzhou Asian Games.
Why?
What happened?
Oh, I bowled badly. I did not perform as I was expected.
So like for us, if we bowl badly, it'll go to the longkang.
Yeah, longkang.
Right?
Always longkang.
But I'm sure that it's not that bad.
Yeah, it wasn't that bad.
And just digressing a little bit, you mentioned that okay, you have like certain do's and don'ts, like, okay, you can't play certain sports and stuff. Is it true if you're a kegler or a bowler, you can actually carry some form of injuries, but you can still play?
Yes, if it's not a major injury, you can actually continue to train, as in, instead of bowling 6 games, you might have a light training, maybe 2 or 3 games, just to get the momentum to go on.
What's the worst injury that happened to you?
Back in 2014 during the Asian Games, when I was bowling trails, and it was just the first game, and I think it was like 5th or 6th frame, I suddenly feel that something just pulled, and I was like, ow. Ooh. what happened? But I did not tell anybody, until even my teammates. I kept to myself, and I was just like,
why?
You know, if you tell your teammate, you
then you can't play.
I mean, I have to play. I have to on. The show
must go on.
Yes, exactly. Right. If I tell my teammate, they might be worried or I just don't want to disturb them.
And then you affect them mentally.
Yes.
That's so nice of you.
Yeah, it's very nice of you. So you barreled your way through, you played.
Yes, and halfway
soldier
through.
Soldier on.
Yeah, halfway through, I caught the physio, our physio pupil, and I was like, can you help me? Like, there's something wrong, but I don't know what is it.
Right.
And they did, like, put on the rock tape and all, and I did not say anything. I just continued with my bowling game until the game ends.
I'm sure you're in excruciating pain, right?
Yes. It was actually horrible.
So you had an injury and still got a silver medal?
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
Wow, indeed. Right, let's bring it back to home and talk a bit about the Malaysian team. Legend, coach, Holloway Chia. Longtime coach of the Malaysian team, you know, can you just tell us a bit about your relationship with him and how he has nurtured your game?
I started with him when I was at the age of 14.
So right at the beginning?
Yes, right at the beginning when I was in the youth program. And he was actually quite serious person. And I'm glad that I'm actually under him, because without his guidance, I think I wouldn't be... Where am I right now?
During an interview some time ago, right, you mentioned that the colour of the medals that you win are not that important, and the most essential thing is that you've given your best. And how do you balance that, and how do you psych up for major tournaments like this, for SEA Games, for example, where your KPI or target is very much measured by the colour of the medals that you win?
I would say in bowling, you can be a champion today, and when... tomorrow, they change the oiling condition, you might not be the champion again. So it's very different from other sports.
Oh, so then how does a great bowler keep up the consistency?
We will use average as a KPI.
Okay.
Yeah. Average is a KPI.
Yes.
Right.
If you're a good bowler, you maintain your average maybe like 210, 220. If someone bowl better than you, maybe they score 240, you have already done your best, and you can't do anything more than that. And in bowling, you're actually into yourself, on the lanes, pins, and the bowling balls.
Just that. This is you, right? You can.
Yeah, we're not fighting with each other, like physically.
You just have to outdo yourself every time you're on the lane, right?
Yes.
But I'm sure there's that aspect of competition, right? I mean, say you're bowling and then you look at the next lane, you look up, you see the score, it's like, okay, I'm going to beat that one. Right?
That's the psychology part. So,
So you don't have any medal target, like color target. You don't have that now. I'm sure you do.
For me, it's podium finish.
Podium finish.
Yeah.
Bronze, silver, gold.
Playing it safe.
Playing it safe.
Playing it safe, yeah.
That was national bowler Cindy Jane, who in the end got 4 medals, 3 golds, and a silver at the 2017 SEA Games. If you'd like to listen to the rest of the interview, do head over to our podcast at www.bfm.my. You tune in to Bar None, my name's Daryl Ong, and this is our special episode on the last show of the year, as we look back on some of our favourite stories of 2017. Up next, GT driver Jasman Jaffar, the youngest professional racer to win the Formula BMW Asia, the first Asian to finish as vice champion in the British Formula 3 Championship, and also took the checkered flag at the most difficult racing track in the world, the Monaco Grand Prix. We kickstart by asking him about how he first got into the driver's seat.
Well, to be honest, it was by luck and by chance, actually. No one in the family was involved in motor racing, but we all had interest in motor racing. I collected little Hot Wheel cars and Tamiya cars. Mm. And I've always had the passion for cars. One day, a very close friend of my late father invited us to a go-kart track in Shah Alam. I was about 7, 6 and a half. And I arrived there and I saw kids my age racing. They vary between 7 to 10 years old. You know, little kids, big helmets, big racing suits.
Right.
But
yeah.
The racing went on, you know. And, you know, my dad saw how much I was really into it, and he said, hey, do you want to have a go? You know, you seem to be loving
interested
it.
In it, right.
So I started the following week in a little Puffo 40cc kart, which is for short people like me at the time. Yeah, and I never looked back. You know, it was a hobby Every weekend, and then it became Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Then it became Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday after school. Mm. And I climbed up the ladder and did the national championship, the Asian championship.
Right.
And then I started doing European races. And I told my dad at 9, you know what? I want to be a racing driver professionally. You know, I want to be in Formula One. Mm. And he had a shock of his life. And it wasn't easy going through mom, but you know what? I am where I am today, you know? The passion drives me.
I mean, once you won your first race, I'm sure that was the moment where you thought, okay, you know, this can be a full-time and a serious career for me, right?
Yeah, I mean, in the beginning, it wasn't very easy. I think motorsport was growing in Malaysia tremendously. We had Sepang built in my early stages of my career. Mm-hmm. Alex was in Formula One.
Yeah.
In 2001, early 2000s. So it was growing enormously. We had huge grids, huge interest, and also corporate sponsors being involved at the time. But seeing it as a professional career, no one has done it yet at the time. So we just took a year at a time along, you know. We did it because we loved the sport, you know, me and my late father, and also the support from my family. And I never thought till today I was fighting for a championship in Formula 3 and then winning Monaco Grand Prix, testing Formula 1. I've enjoyed the sacrifices I made to get to where I am today.
I bet it happened all very quickly for you, right?
It did.
Race after race, win after win.
It did. I mean, one of my main targets early part of my career was to join Petronas, which they had the talent program. I was with them for about 7 years. That's when I furthered my racing. And I left Petronas after I did the Formula Renault 3.5. We went our separate ways. And I joined Mercedes-AMG to do my first year of GTs, which I finished second. And now I'm with McLaren.
As regular fans, we watch, you know, F1 or whatever it may be on TV. And it can be kind of deceiving, right? Even with the driver camera, right? Going really fast, you know, coming around the bends, but it doesn't really give the feel of driving in the driver's seat. I'm sure it's a lot more intense, a lot more different when you're actually sitting in the car. Take us behind the scenes. Tell us, you know, some of the things that the camera doesn't show.
Well, adrenaline is something that takes over us an hour before, or even before the race weekend. You know, you feel pumped, you feel excited, you feel like you want to do well. That's the first thing that takes over you. The second thing is pressure. You know, okay. Pressure to perform. You know, racing, it's not, obviously it's not a cheap sport. You have not a lot of chances to prove yourself. So that's your, every race is as though it's your last race.
Right.
So your pressure to perform is always there. And lastly, we're so focused that every single distraction doesn't matter anymore. And for example, my races, we have to focus on the strategies, the fuel consumption, the pit stops and so on. And all of that, you have to time it to perfection. So, you know, you have to implant it as a habit in your brain already.
Mm.
So all of that, as a racing driver, you have to tick all that boxes for a good preparation. On top of that, you still have to see your media and your sponsors. You know, you have to entertain guests, because those are the guys that are paying the bills, right? So you have both sides. You have to entertain. At the same time, you have to learn to switch to be focused. So maintaining that, and also, you know what? You got to enjoy it. Mm. If you don't enjoy it, enjoy what you do, pressure to perform, you know, spending time with your sponsors, then, you know, don't bother doing it if you're not enjoying it. So I enjoy doing it, even though, you know, sometimes I leave the racetrack at 10:30 or 11 o'clock at night. But looking back, I enjoyed the whole day being there.
So. Yeah, sounds like you don't have much free time on your hands.
No, the traveling takes a lot of my time, to be honest. But it's something that I'm used to now.
All right, so you kind of joined endurance racing this year, specifically meant to test the durability and equipment and the endurance of the driver especially.
Correct.
Something you've been focusing on for a few seasons?
Yeah, Formula racing back then a couple of years ago was more so on sprint racing.
Yeah.
As we watched on Formula One, it's an hour and a half sprint racing. So endurance, we do a lot more. The shorter races are 3 hours. We have the 6 hours, 12 hours, and 24. the 24-hour races are the jewel races. So those are
Jewel races.
Yeah, those are the ones that you score big points.
Okay.
A lot of the manufacturers put money into it, and that's the one you want to win the big prize.
Right.
So there's a build up to it. You know?
And that one's a team effort, right?
Yeah.
It's not you in the driver's seat for 24 hours.
So that you have to be a huge team player, prepare together with the team and so on and so forth. So 24-hour races, we drive over almost 7-8 hour
shifts,
driving almost, time. Right. So 2-hour shifts. And it's mentally challenging.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Physically as well, right?
Yeah. But the satisfaction of crossing that finish line after you finish, it's on another. It's another planet. You know.
So you prefer endurance racing now to?
I wouldn't say prefer. It's a whole new spectrum of racing. You know that I never thought that I enjoyed. I would enjoy it this much.
Okay.
And you know, GT is growing enormously. Everywhere, you know, in Europe, in America, in Asia. I think fans love the cars and the sound. And hey, you know, my last race, it was 180,000 fans, you know. That's amazing.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Racing is a cruel sport. One small mistake, understeer and oversteer, can cost you the race. Even more than the race, sometimes can cost you your life, right? Can you tell us some of, you know, the close brushes you had with, you know, life-threatening and risky situations?
I touch wood, you know, I haven't gone that far.
That's good.
I had a big one a few years ago, in two occasions. One was in Formula 3, where I had a big crash in the wet, where our visibility was quite poor. It was a qualifying session, which I ended up in the wall. I couldn't feel my legs.
Oh, man.
And I thought, you know, that was a very good. I was extracted out of the car. And that was a scary moment. But my legs were just severely bruised, iced and painkillers. But
right.
I still raced.
Well, you got up pretty light, I guess.
Yeah. And then a few years ago, World Series, I had a big one in Monza, which I ended up in the wall, crashing to another guy. Same thing. It was just bruises on my shoulders and arms. But God's protecting me, you know.
And I guess the cars nowadays are meant to be, you know, top-notch safety, right? Safety features.
It is. But, you know, you can't run away from these injuries, you know, these little injuries that is bound to happen. But we know what we signed up for. So that's not going to stop me from racing.
Coming back home, Malaysia, we just had our last F1 race a few months ago. And I guess we kind of pulled the plug through the decline of viewership, ticket sales, that sort of thing. What are your thoughts on this? You know, how can we elevate again? I mean, F1 is just a part of motorsport, right? But you can't deny that F1 is the motorsport in Malaysia.
Yeah, I mean, the fans has always been there. Obviously, last few years, probably the viewerships haven't been great and stuff, but the passion still lives on. Personally, I'm sad about it. You know,
I think most F1 fans in Malaysia.
Yeah. So my personal feelings is that I it was a childhood dream to be racing in my Malaysian Grand Prix, but hey ho, it's not the end of the world. You know, there's other pinnacle level of racing that may come in the years coming ahead. You know, we have fantastic tracks and facilities like Sepang, you know, and Johor Circuit, which is rising up. And others are also coming up, and hopefully we can nurture and groom more talents to reach into greater heights. But I sincerely hope that the industry grows to a better place for everyone.
What do you think that we, as you know, consumers of motorsports, can do as fans, you know, to elevate the sport?
The comfort zone is something we need to get out from. Why I sense that, you know, we can press upon with the fact that we're as good as them, or if not better. Them meaning competitors,
right?
Not necessarily Europeans or whatever, just competitors. We have the talent, we have the facility, we have done it, you know. You know, Alex got there, Alex with the Audi, I'm with McLaren, and it has to be an ongoing process, you know. Like, for example, in the UK, There's so many driver development programs that nurture talents to have professional careers. But it's not just about the driver, because you need engineers and mechanics to build your car. So nurturing engineers, mechanics, and building up the whole industry together, you know. And I feel that, you know, we can do it. Yeah. We can do it.
That was Jasman Jaffar, McLaren GT driver, who after this interview went on to make his debut at the Le Mans Asian Series in Fuji, Japan. Not only that, he finished third. If you'd like to check out the rest of the interview, do head over to our podcast at www.bfm.my. You tune in to Bar None, the show that brings you through the ins and outs of the sporting world, our special episode as we look back on two of our favourite stories of 2017. My name's Darryl Ong, and we've come to the end of the show. Just before we go, if you'd like to get in touch with us, do tweet us at BFM Radio. Do download our latest app, available via Google Play and the App Store. Signing off for now, have a great new year and enjoy your holidays. You've been tuning into Bar None. Join us again for the first show of the year, same time next week, right here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi, I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans. 30% of Americans who are planning home improvements of $5,000 or more will pay for those renovations with a high-interest credit card. That may not be a great idea. A better idea may be to take cash out of your home with a Quicken Loans 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. The rate today on our 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is 4.375%. APR, 4.65%. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate subject to change. Pay 2.13% fee to receive this discounted rate. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. License in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.